Welcome to episode 21 of the Golf Talk podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Joining me, as always, from Washington, Jeff Smith.
Hello.
We sent Everardo home for the day, so he will not be joining us. First off, in the news this week, Tiger Woods' father, Earl, has passed away, had a long battle with cancer, and finally succumbed on Tuesday or Wednesday. Wednesday, I believe.
Yeah.
Earl Woods no longer with us.
It's a long, long time in coming, and you kind of wonder, I think everyone kind of collectively takes a sigh of relief almost, but I kind of wonder how Tiger's dealing with it right now.
It's been a long time. I mean, he's been near death for the past year or so. My wife pointed out to me that, you know, people have a way of almost needing permission to die.
Yeah.
I think that maybe Earl wanted to see Tiger play in one more Masters. And then, you know, Tiger says, I'm going to go home and spend some time with my dad. He does that, goes home, spends some time with his dad. And, you know, maybe that was just all he needed, was kind of, not that he gave up or whatever, but just that he was at peace with what had gone on. So,
yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I can remember back when we lost my grandmother. She got all the kids around her, and it wasn't 24 hours later she decided to leave. You know, I think there's something to that. So
hung on for quite a while, though, and saw a great year out of Tiger last year. So.
Yep.
He certainly left his impression and his mark on the world in and through his fourth son. So
yeah, and you know, it kind of makes me remember, you know, Earl Woods, because he's been so sick, has kind of been off the radar for a long time. But you know, kind of watching some of his interviews and seeing him interact with the press and with his son, he was a character. I mean, he was just He was really, really funny guy.
Well, people claim that he was very abrasive or perhaps a bit too aggressive in his predictions there at first, but it turns out pretty much everything he ever said has come true about Tiger. When Tiger had seven events to qualify for the PGA Tour in 1996, Earl said, what? He's got seven chances. He'll win at least one of them, and he won two.
Yeah, well, and everyone's kind of, I mean, had Tiger not been Tiger, you know, all of us would have said, oh, you know, he's kind of a blowhard, but pretty soon everybody starts to believe in him, and, you know, you watch the interviews of various writers and columnists who have followed him and gotten to know Earl, you know, they got won over. It didn't take too long either, I don't think.
We'll talk a bit more about that, but our thoughts go out to the Woods family at this moment. Best of luck, and not that we knew Earl, but, you know, the golf world as a whole did, so nice knowing you, and good job. Chris Couch, I keep wanting to say Tim Couch, moving on here. Chris Couch had kind of an up and down day. You know, he had to hole a 10-footer for bogey at the 17th hole of par 3, and then had to hole a 55-foot chip for par on 18 to win the Zurich Classic. Chris coming out of the Nationwide Tour last year.
Uh-huh.
Did you get a chance to watch much of the Zurich Classic there?
Yeah, I sure did. I saw the end of the round, and kind of two images stick out to me in that last round. One of them is Fred Funk on the practice tee as he's awaiting the playoff. There's a strong possibility of a playoff coming up, and he's kind of swinging. The crowd goes wild, and Fred kind of has a little smirk on his face and puts his iron back in his bag. Right. And says, well, that's it. I gave it a go. And then the other is
Funk shot 62 that day, so.
Oh, I mean, he was on fire. That was great. And then, of course, Chris Couch, you know, when he makes this unbelievable chip in and slams the club down. I mean, I love to see new guys win. Yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, you might say it's not great for golf or whatever. I think it's awesome.
Well, Lanny Watkins apparently got a little overwhelmed. You know, did you hear his call?
I saw
the replay.
Yeah, I did.
He goes, holy shit, you know. On the air. Kind of forgot, apparently, that he was on the air. Jim didn't have much to say after that, but
right.
Certainly an exciting way to win, holding a 55-foot chip.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, so. It was great. And it was just great to see Chris Couch kind of just not even believing that it happened. Yep. So
Charles Howell III coming up short yet again.
Yeah, no kidding.
The skinny little jerk.
Twig.
John Daly has lost between $50 and $60 million in 12 years of heavy gambling.
Wow.
Not something, really not a shock to hear this, though.
If no.
You think about it. He has a very compulsive personality, so this isn't the kind of thing that someone who's compulsive avoids, usually.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, John's going to be John. He's had quite a bit of these stumbles or problems along the way, and, a lot of people like John Daly. They're, you know, John has a few haters, I suppose, but he's a pretty likable guy, he's himself, and, you know, having this show up, no, it's no surprise.
I wonder, though, it was pointed out, you know, he says he lost between 50 or 60 million. There has to be a, you know, I'm not sure if that's his losses or if that includes net. I mean, there had to be a winning streak in there somewhere.
Well, I heard him say, I believe I heard him say in the interview that he had, what was it, last week, that, well, I might have made 25 or 30 million, but I've lost 50 or 60 in the process. He might cut that in half. I don't know.
He's got a new book coming out, and this certainly makes people want to read it.
That's true.
A little more details are forthcoming there. I certainly hope he's kicked the habit. He says he's kind of relapsed only once, and that was after he three-putted to lose to Woods at the World Golf Championship at Harding Park last year.
Mm-hmm.
$1.65 million gone there.
Oh!
After winning $750,000. Red numbers are good on the golf course, not so much on the checkbook. I don't know. We'll pay some bills right now and be right back after this message from Golf Gods and Titleist.
When you get in a fairway bunker, choke up on the club a little bit, and I like to aim for the top of the ball.
On long bunker shots, flatten your swing.
You want to feel down in the sand, and then use your instincts.
When you get a plug lie, all you want to do is take a steeper swing and explode down on the ball.
If you want to hit a punch shot, play the ball back in your stance.
When you're in the rough, you're going to want to hit a cut.
One more tip. Trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of thesandtrap.com.
This week on Chip Shots, building for the future. For someone getting started in the game of golf, a big initial decision is what is the appropriate level of equipment spend. While it might be enticing to spend a lot of money buying brand name equipment at the early stages, it might be more appropriate and savvy to start with a complete set. Buying a complete set of clubs is a great way to build a foundation that will serve your golf needs for years. While you can't totally dismiss the craftsmanship and technology provided with the more well-known brands, the quality and performance in the value price sets is quite good and often comparable to the better known brands. One other advantage. While going the used route can be a good value, if you buy a complete set, the clubs were designed to be used together. If you buy a hodgepodge assortment, you may tend to lean toward a grouping of products not totally appropriate to your game. As your game grows, you'll find out where you might want to upgrade your set. Maybe a couple of lofted wedges would improve your short game. Perhaps you want to try a big-name driver. You can add these pieces to your complete set down the road instead of taking the financial hit of buying them all at once. If you're going to add one additional piece to a prepackaged complete set, consider a 54 or 56 degree sand wedge. They run anywhere from $14.95 on the low end to upwards of $100 at the high end. Well, that's it for Chip Shots this week. For a listing of some of our preferred complete sets, check out thesandtrap.com's text intro to this segment. Now back to the podcast.
And welcome back. This week in our forum topic of the week, how will Tiger fare after losing his dad? Jeff, your thoughts?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, obviously you would think that anyone, Tiger included, would want to take some time off. I kind of expect that Tiger is going to be taking some time off, and he wants, when he comes back, he wants to be ready. He wants to come out and compete. Tiger's not a halfway kind of guy. I don't think he's going to step onto the course unless he's ready to go out and win for pops, in his words. So that's kind of my take. I think he's going to need some time off. Yeah, it's kind of up in the air. Will he be back for the U.S. Open? I'm not sure.
I think he'll be back for the Open. I think he'll probably play the Memorial the week before, because that's a good warm-up course. He's used that in the past to warm up for the U.S. Open. You'll see him hitting shots that don't really fit that course, but shots that he thinks he'll need at the U.S. Open. Half the time he still wins when he's doing that anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think he'll use that as a good warm-up, and I think, if anything, his resolve and focus may be strengthened, at least for the end of this year. You know, he'll want to, you know, not necessarily send his father out on a good note or whatever, but, you know, win a few for his dad. You could tell he really wanted to at the Masters. It just didn't come together for him. Same thing last year at the Masters. So I think he's going to try to win a few for his dad. Tiger with a mission. As we've seen, Stephen Ames gives him a reason to win a tournament. Not a very big one. Or win a match. 9-8. You know, winning one for his dad's a much bigger reason than someone saying Tiger can't drive the ball very straight. So I think he could be on a tear once he regroups.
Yeah, Tiger with more incentive doesn't sound very reassuring to the rest of the field.
We'll be right back again after this message from Titleist.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think Abby Phillips.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to lounge my feet to the right a little bit, hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip, trust your tightness.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
And welcome back. Last Tiger Woods story, I believe, here. Yep, Tiger Woods, before he went home to spend some time with his daughter, he kind of had a prior engagement, and that would be Stevie Williams' engagement to his fiancée. He had to go to New Zealand to be the best man at Stevie's wedding. While he was down in New Zealand, he figured he'd have a little fun. So he bungee jumped from a cable car 440 feet above, 8-second free fall, and he raced in a little stock car race and won one out of two races. The other race, he was a blocker. Can he keep this guy down or what?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, I think it's awesome that Tiger's out there having a good time. I mean, this, you know, you have to think that, you know, what he's gone through with his dad's suffering, and he's going to lose him. It's inevitable. I have to think that something like this, bungee jumping and racing in cars, it's got to be just great for him, just to kind of unwind, get away. You know, it takes Tiger Woods getting all the way across the world to get away, and right. You know, I think it's good for him, and I think that's just what he needed.
A lot of people thought that it may be too risky or too dangerous, you know, bungee mm-hmm. jumping, you know, thrill seeking gone a little too far. Some people think the scuba diving with sharks is a little too far. Mm-hmm. You know, I tend to believe that people know what the risks of bungee jumping are, and they're surprisingly low because they take so many precautions. You are going towards a pool of water, so if it stretches out and you only fall 30 feet into the water, that's not too bad. Things like that. Right. But I have to wonder if I would do the same kind of things, you know, given my life goals and whatnot. Right. I don't know. I mean, if you're the best golfer in the world, you probably really can't get a thrill from, you know, sitting at home reading a book, I guess.
Right. Well, you have to think also, I mean, Steve Williams, his caddy's absolutely out of his mind. So, you know, when you're hanging around a guy like this who's a thrill seeker,
yep.
he's driving fast cars all the time. I mean, you know, finally he basically talks Tiger into it. I don't know if I really see Tiger as a bungee jumper. But
my English teacher used to say, one boy, one brain, two boys, half a brain, four boys, no brain at all. So
that's a good case of that.
Between Tiger and Stevie, half a brain. When they get yep, together.
That's it.
Annika Sorenstam she collapsed and shot a final round 75 to give some Asian girl. I don't know. They all sound the same to me. So some Asian girl, her first win on the LPGA Tour. What's up with Annika this year?
Hey, you know, I had high hopes for this lady, and with good reason. I can remember the tail end of last season, we talked about predictions, and I didn't really think there was any chance that people were going to eclipse her. I mean, you look, what is it, the last 5-6 years, she's right. had no less than 8 wins per season, and she's really surprising me. I just think she's lacking confidence. I think she's tentative on the green. She's just not striking the ball like Annika can. So, yeah, big surprise to me.
Well, I think I said last year that several times that this could be the year. We may see Annika fall just a bit, or the others catch up to her a little sooner than a lot of people are saying. A lot of people like you were giving mm-hmm. her 3 or 4 more years of being on the top, and she's not on the top this year.
Well, she's gonna have to turn it around.
I thought it would be a lot more of, you know, the competition catching up to her than her falling back, but she's fallen back quite a bit this year. I'm not sure the competition has really advanced on her too much. Paula Creamer hasn't had a good year, etc. So
I wonder if somehow fatigue has caught up with her. I mean, she's maintained such a high level of excellence for so long. If she just doesn't have that, whatever that is inside her that drives her almost.
Might be. We shall see. She's still got 2/3 of the year left, so you know, could turn around in a heartbeat for her.
Yep.
4 days for the Ryder Cup is a possibility with the new schedule and the PGA Tour starting next year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you care to see the Ryder Cup go to 4 days? Right now it's 3 with 2 matches played on Friday and Saturday, and then, of course, singles on Sunday.
I don't know if an extra day is going to add too much to the Ryder Cup. I mean, it's already been a great rivalry, and, you know, is a fourth day to match, you know, our regular 4-day tour events going to make much difference? I'm not sure it is. I mean, if it, in fact, allows more diverse competition where you have other different players playing against each other, well, I think that might add some drama. But overall, I'm not really sure what the reasoning is.
Well, the reasoning is mostly that in October, the daylight is not very long. There's not much daylight in Britain area in 2010 and stuff. So that's what they're looking at, the 2010 Ryder Cup in over there in Europe. Mm-hmm. So they're talking about daylight mostly. I'd like to see it kept to 3 days. 4 days is, I'm not going to say the Ryder Cup will ever drag on, but it will seem a bit longer than the 3 days of very action-packed action that it is now. Action-packed action.
That's just action. Lots of action.
Lots of action there. A caddy has won a $34,000 lawsuit after being made fun of for losing to a woman. Would you take $34,000 to lose to a woman?
Yes, I would. Well, what it cracks me up, and of course you don't know
would,
the...
Would you buy drinks for everybody after you won the $34,000?
You better believe it. I won't do it for a hole-in-one, but I would for that.
We know it, and so do all of our listeners.
You know, it's like, what gets me is, like, why the guy, he complains about it, right? You know, so, and then, what, fired for complaining? I mean, what, you know, what is that? You obviously, you don't know the details, but it just seems so outlandish.
Yeah, he lost to a woman, was picked on about it, or ridiculed, complained about it, and was fired.
He should have just stayed in bed that day.
Yeah, well, losing to a woman was bad enough. Michelle Wee is going to attempt to qualify for the U.S. Open. Let it be known that she made the cut, apparently, on the Asian Tour, wherever she's playing in the SK Open. I think KJ Choi is the only male in the top 500 in the world playing in that event. So, whoop-de-doo, you know. But she has made a cut on in a men's event, I guess.
Wow.
I mean, whatever. But she's going to attempt to qualify for the U.S. Open. Will she make it?
Will she make the U.S. Open? Oh, no. You know, we've seen her play in regular tour events, and this takes nothing away from Michelle Wee or her skills as a golfer. I mean, she's outstanding. She is a phenomenal player. But this is the U.S. Open, people. I mean, this is one of the toughest events, if not the toughest major, that we see. I mean, the USGA has got teeth, and, you know, those teeth are bared at the U.S. Open. I just don't think Michelle Wee has got, you know, that level of play in her.
Right, and the qualifying courses aren't, of course, set up quite like the U.S. Open course with 8-inch rough or anything, but they are set up to be difficult. They are set up with longer rough. They are set up with harder greens. I've seen Michelle Wee skank 4-irons out of semi-thick rough because she doesn't quite have the strength or speed to get through it. You know, Tiger Woods will do that one-handed thing so he doesn't hurt his wrists going through. It gets thick, and I'm not sure that unless she hits every fairway, it's going to be a long day for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she may make it through to the sectional qualifying or the region, whatever the smaller one is, the one in Hawaii that she's going to. But the one after that, good luck.
Yep.
Jack Nicklaus has told people that he can't play golf for fun. He says, I hope one day I'll get over my competitiveness and get back to just going out and playing it with friends and enjoying it. But I'm not over that yet. I can't stand not being able to give it my best. Now, this strikes me as odd. You know, how can you can give it your best and still have fun? You know, you can compete with yourself internally and have fun with the people around you. I don't understand what his problem is there.
Yeah, that's the reasoning that, you know, he's used to whooping the best in the world and being up there. What does he say here? The prospect of shooting one or two under each day to finish in the top 20 does not excite the three-time Open champion, this writer says, Nick Roger. Whoop-de-doo, he added. I don't get a big kick out of that. You know, I mean, yeah, maybe he needs to adjust, but I understand a guy who's basically ruled the face of golf for decades. You know, he just doesn't, it doesn't maybe measure up. Now, if it was me, heck, I'd get out there, but I'm not Jack Nicklaus.
No?
No.
Oh, well, that's why we hired you. I thought you were...
Refer to my handicap at the site.
Okay. Well,
yep.
I think that you could, every time I'm out there, I'm competing. Obviously, I'm not, you know, beating the best in the world, but I'm competing, and I'm still having fun. So I'm not sure. I think there's possibly, we need some more details in there. I don't think this article is talking about Jack going home and playing with his sons or some of his friends or something on a golf course just to goof around. I think maybe this is talking about playing competitive golf for fun. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Good luck, Jack.
Right.
You should, you know, go back to betting quarters or something, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe it's a little bit of I'm taking my ball and going home if I can't win the whole thing anymore.
Yeah, could be a bit of that. So we're taking our ball and going home now because we're done. So thanks for listening to episode 21 of the Golf Talk Podcast brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Visit us online at thesandtrap.com. Stop by, say hi in our forum. You too could join the podcast with us. We record every Friday, and we have a thread going in the forum where we post the time that we'll be recording. All you need is Skype at skype.com, skype.com. We do our recording and stuff in that. So stop by, say hi, and possibly join our podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. This is Eric Barzeski and Jeff Smith. Take care.
Hey, see you next time.